Welcome to the Asia Business First podcast. I'm Adam Bhaktia.
And I'm Julie Yu. You know, Adam, we've been talking quite a bit about the costs of retirement and also, you know, writing a will in our previous podcast. Yeah, topics that many of us put off and worry about later until we are in our 40s and 50s. But in knowing how much you love to plan things ahead, I bet you have a specific vision or maybe a financial plan for retirement.
You make a good point, but I think I'm only planning my holidays in advance. I don't know about my financial plan. Planning for retirement. But you know, Julie, I have thought about it over the past, I would say, 10 years or so since the global financial crisis, because the one thing that changed the game back then was the GFC triggered off rock bottom global interest rates. And so up until that time, you know, you'd work and, you know, you save and you put your money in the bank, you think, oh, okay, so I'm earning X interest rate, or I can put a lump sum amount in fixed deposit and earn a decent rate in certain countries. All that changed, right, with the global financial crisis and it crated out interest rates. So after that, I think I really had to think, well, what am I going to do, right?
You're with all that money.
With all that money, all the $10,000 that I'd saved in my bank, you know, no, it was a bit more than that. But, you know, you really had to sort of ask yourself these hard questions. Like, well, you know, how long am I going to live for? You know, how long am I going to work for? Well, you know, how am I going to derive a decent return that will be able to keep the lifestyle that I've been accustomed to, so to speak? So, yeah, I mean, I started looking at it then and thought, well, now, you know, your savings and retirement plans has to get a little bit more sophisticated.
Certainly. And here in Singapore, the government has tried to mitigate these concerns about life expectancy or rising cost of living by implementing a compulsory savings plan for all working Singaporeans and permanent residents. And it's called the Central Provident Fund, or CPF in short.
And of course, we all expect to be living long lives, right? And this is what's happening. So it's changing the game, literally. Basically, the CPF here, of course, for everybody who's listening, at least in Singapore, works here, lives here, it's a social security scheme that you can tap on once you're 55. On that note, just a little anecdote, I think it's quite funny, isn't it? Because in the old days, you know, my parents' generation, everybody retired in the 50s and the 60s, right? So this line in the sand of 55 is quite interesting because life expectancy has changed. Anyway, I'm digressing. Basically, these social security savings, all these funded by contributions from yourself, us, the employees, and also employers. For workers aged 55 and below, their CPF contributions will amount to a total of 37% of their monthly salary, with 17% contributed by the employer and 20% by the individual employee. Then a CPF contribution rate from both employer and employee decreases after the worker reaches 55 years of age.
Yeah,
ooh, I'm not that far away, Julie. How exciting.
Exciting indeed. And here's what it starts to get a little complicated. When you're between the ages of 35 and 55, the CPF contributions get divided into three accounts, known as the ordinary account, the special account, and the MediSave account. And these accounts offer different interest rates, which are reviewed on a quarterly basis.
And I have to admit, Julie, that I absolutely have dropped the ball, because at least until we decided we're going to do this podcast on CPF topic, I had really no idea. I just thought I'd put money away and it just went into account. I didn't know there were all these options. But to find out how to make the most of our CPF contributions in these accounts, let's turn to the experts who are joining us today. We have on the desk here Christopher Tan, who wears many hats. He's the Executive Director of Financial Advisor and Money Management Company, Money Owl. In addition, he's the CEO of Fund Management Company, Provident, and was a member of the CPF Advisory Panel from 2014 to 2016, so we can pick Christopher's brain a little bit there. And also, pleased to be joined by Kelvin Goh, Head of Investments and Wealth Advisory at OCBC Bank. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for joining us.
So, a couple of admissions, and I'm a little embarrassed about it. One, my age, because obviously I worked in Malaysia, so I've accumulated all this money in EPF. It's not a lot, but, you know, it's some money there. And, of course, CPF here in Singapore, because I've been working in Singapore for almost 13 years. I call it laziness or just taking it for granted. I just assumed you put money there and you just took it out when you were going to retire. I didn't really realize that there were all these options that were available to the contributors like myself. Christopher, I'll start with you. Is this a common issue, or do all the contributors fully understand, you know, the options that they have available to them when they are contributing to their CPF.
I think generally plans. Singaporeans understand CPF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't say that they understand it in detail because it is a pretty complex scheme. You can do a lot of things with your CPF accounts. The ordinary account, primarily, you can use it for four purposes. Firstly, of course, you can use it to pay for your mortgage. Mm-hmm. You can also use your funds in your ordinary account to loan it to your children if they are studying in the local tertiary institutions. Mm-hmm. You can, of course, use your monies in OA to buy insurance and also do investments. Mm. So most Singaporeans actually understand that. Yeah, and okay. if you really use your monies in your OA for that, by the time you reach 55 years old, actually your balances in your OA would be pretty low. Mm. The second account, which is special account, is primarily meant for retirement. And that is why you can only use monies in your special account to buy financial products that are meant for retirement. Mm-hmm. Of course, many years ago, in 1999, if I remember correctly, the government actually allowed people to use monies in a special account for contingency purpose. And by that, I mean that if they run out of money in their ordinary account to pay for their housing loan, they can actually use part of money in your special account to pay for mortgages. But that's not the intent because a special account interest rate is very high. Mm. And of course, the third account that every Singaporean, I would say, we'd be very familiar with would be your MediSave account. Mm. There are two primary purposes for that particular account. One is to pay the premiums of approved insurances, such as your MediShield Life and today ElderShield, and by 2021, your CareShield Life. And of course, the second purpose for MediSave is to pay for medical expenses that you incur. So I think generally Singaporeans understand what these accounts are for, but the operational part of it can get a bit complicated.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is, you know, with the complexity and the options out there for what to do with this money, do Singaporean contributors, PRs actually take advantage of all the options that are out there? So sometimes you think, oh my gosh, there's so many things to look at. I'm just going to put it aside. Mm-hmm. I mean, Calvin, what are people actually taking up some of these options?
Yes, we do see interest in the various investment options for CPF. I mean, over the last 10 years, we've basically seen interest rates at a relatively low level. So what the CPF has done is that it's basically given investors an adoption. The risk-free rate for CPF ordinary, if you compare it to your typical bank deposits, it's higher, 2.5 at the very least, of course, subject to other minimum amounts. What the CPF has essentially done, and what the government is trying to do, is to provide additional options for investors to not just be looking at the CPF ordinary account as a way to build up their retirement or for other purposes, but to also provide some other options. But of course, these other options would then require some form of financial advisory, financial expertise before going into it. I think one thing that has to be especially considered is that the CPF ordinary account provides a much higher baseline rate, as at least as compared to your typical deposit rate. So it's with that in mind that you have to take note of this risk-free rate when you make a subsequent investment decision down the road.
Okay. You know, I just started making contributions to CPF, just turned PR, so still early days, but it feels great to see it.
Better late than never. Don't worry. Welcome to the team.
Thank you. And it does feel great to see it sort of, you know, adding up in my account. But with the interest rate you were talking about, which are higher compared to most savings accounts, how much should we keep sort of locked up in our CPF accounts?
So my personal opinion is that for our special account, you should really not touch it. You should just leave the money there. I would not even advocate that you use it to invest in any financial products. That's because the special account...
Calvin's going to do it. Calvin, come on.
Yeah. That's because the special account currently is still guaranteed at 4%. Mm. And a portion of your special account can even get you 5% per year.
Yep.
And it's guaranteed. It's very low risk, almost risk-free.
Yep.
You can't get that kind of return for that kind of risk. Yeah, so I think you shouldn't touch, that's my opinion, that you shouldn't touch your special account. MediSave, you can't touch it anyway. The only thing that you can really use, if anything, is your ordinary account. So you got to make a decision whether you should keep your money in ordinary account or use it for investments or use it for mortgage. So I'll say that if you're going to use your money from OA to pay your mortgage, make a decision whether you should use part cash or part CPF. If you are those conservative type and you're not going to do anything with your cash, you might as well use your cash to pay part of the mortgage instead of using your CPF, because your CPF gives you a floor of 2.5%.
Right.
There's no reason to be using a 2.5% account to pay mortgage, leaving your cash in a bank that gives you only 1%. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to use your ordinary account to invest, I think Kelvin made a point just now that you've got to consider that 2.5% base rate, whether you can do anything better than 2.5, mm-hmm. whether the risk that you are taking is worthwhile, you know, mm-hmm. because CPF OA is already giving you a 2.5. I'll say that generally, if you're prepared to take some risks, it is still okay to use your ordinary account to do some investments.
Mm.
Yeah.
Calvin, do you see a lot of people taking up the investment option and dipping into the special account to make those investments, or are people quite cautious and risk averse and not doing so, as Christopher was suggesting that should be the case?
I think to Chris' point, yes, with the higher baseline rate for the special account, people generally will be a bit mindful because that is your risk-free rate, so to speak. Chris made an absolutely perfect point with regards to the lower boundaries for ordinary accounts. So that's at 2.5%. It opens up the investment options somewhat, given the lower rate. I think the key thing for CPF is that it provides an option for conservative investors who are willing to park their cash for a significant period of time. Having said that, that significant period of time, it does also, how should we say, it does also crystallize your ultimate objective. If you are, let's say, 20-year-old, 30-year-old investor with some form of CPF savings, and you are knowing that this amount of money is for retirement purposes, you have a 20-30-year window. This 20-30-year window should be part of your investment decision process in terms of what an asset class you can be looking at. Mm. So now it's a bit of a general statement, but over the longer term, generally your equities should outperform this 2.5%. Of course, subject to when you actually retire. But I think what the CPF does is, because it gives you this lock-in period and you are basing it against this lock-in period, so your investment horizon may be extended accordingly. So it's not just on the basis that, oh, I need the money over the next 1 year, 2 years. Now, if I know that I need this amount of money over the next 10, 20 years, and I can find an asset class that's able to outperform this 2.5% over this period of time, then yes, I would be looking a bit more closely at this asset class.
And these gains made from the CPF investment scheme are not subjected to capital gains taxes?
No, taxes. No, they're not. No.
Talking about the mandated amounts, I mean, I'm not sure if it's changed in Malaysia compared to Singapore as well, but I remember working there that, you know, you contributed, I think back then it was 20% ages ago, employee, here it's 37%. But what I didn't realize until I actually got into the scheme was the fact that it's capped, right? So, I mean, if you earn a huge amount of money, it's not going to really matter, right? Because your CPF is capped at a certain amount. That said, with the options on the table and the floor rates or risk-free rates that you have for the OA and SA, do you advise that average employees put more voluntary contributions into CPF, or should they manage their savings outside of CPF individually themselves? Because, I mean, honestly, if, you know, if you're capped at, on CPF, I mean, there's only so much you can invest, right?
So it's very interesting you said that, because actually a lot of Singaporeans say that the CPF is a Ponzi scheme. It's that the government wants to suck away your money, you know, and keep it there. But, right. If it is a Ponzi scheme, then it would be the only Ponzi scheme that stopped you from putting more money. Yeah, because this particular quote-unquote Ponzi scheme limits your contribution to 17 months of 6,000 salary cap. So it doesn't matter that Adam and Julie, both of you earn 20,000, 30,000 a month. It doesn't matter because it's going to cap at 6,000 times 17 months and then times that 37%.
Mm, okay. So if why do they cap it, actually? I'm trying to understand the idea behind that.
There is a liability on the government to give that interest.
Mm, okay.
And really, the Social Security is to benefit the mass market and the people who are of lower income.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't cap it, and with a high interest rate of 4 to 5%, the rich will all put the money in there.
Mm.
And the liability of delivering that 4% rests on GIC, because our money from CPF is actually managed by GIC.
Mm.
So if GIC cannot deliver that 4% per year, and the last report showed that it has gone down below 4%, then there's a liability of the government to fulfill that 4%.
To so fill
that's,
the hole.
Yes. Mm. And that's why it's limited to 17 months. Mm. And the second limit actually is your special account. This year, the maximum you can top up into your special account is actually 176,000. That's the max you can put in. So now the question is whether Singaporeans should top up.
Mm.
I would say that, and again, it's my personal opinion, that if you have got liquidity, Because the thing about CPF is like, if you want to top up your CPF, it's like joining secret society. It's very easy to get in. It's almost impossible to get out until 55 or 65. Okay. Right? So if you want to put in your money, you need to have liquidity because you've got to be prepared to be locked in for the long run. Mm. But if you're prepared for that, the special account is actually really great because it's 4 to 5%. Mm. Yeah. For ordinary account, if you're going to do over and above that 17 months contribution that I say, it is called the voluntary contribution scheme. Yep. It will not just be top up into your special account. It's going to be top up across your three accounts. Mm. And you've got to consider whether you want part of your money to be sitting in MediSafe.
Yeah.
So I will advise Singaporeans, if you can take the liquidity, top up your special account, either using cash or if you've got excess in your OA. And after taking into account your mortgage payment, you can consider transferring from your ordinary account into your special account to get a higher interest rate.
Interesting. So you can't, if you want to do a voluntary contribution, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to take X money and put it in the special account. It's just going to be...
You can. There are two schemes. So the first scheme is called the retirement sum top-up scheme. Mm. That's the one that you put straight into the special account. You can choose, but subject to a cap of 176. The second scheme is the voluntary contribution scheme, whereby if you top an amount subject to the limit of 17 months times 6,000, times that 37%, when you go by that scheme, every dollar that is topped up is spread across the three accounts. You can't choose under that scheme where you want to top up.
Let's talk about CPF Life. Now, when Singaporeans or PR turn 65, they're automatically placed in this scheme, and this is a monthly payout from one's own retirement sum. So there are three CPF Life plans here. Which plan should I choose to get the biggest payout?
Well, it's ultimately very much up to each and every one's preference. With regards to the CPF Life schemes, those which are available, we have a standard plan, basic plan, and escalating plan. So based on the amount that's going to be attributed into this, into the CPF Life, they give some form of indication on a monthly basis how much you'll be looking at. So this ranges from sums below 1,000. So let's say for standard plan, they give a range of approximately about 750 to 800. And it moves up depending on which plan that you have. I think some of the key considerations is firstly whether the amounts that are going to be paid out on a monthly basis, is that sufficient for your needs? I think another consideration for a lot of people who are placed in CPF is whether or not they want to bequest an additional amount of money or they want to leave aside more for their family members at the end of the day. So they basically have to balance how much do they need in terms of their monthly requirements and also in terms of their wishes, in terms of their legacy planning, how much do they want to bequest to their next of kin on the assumption that there's a remainder of sums from the CPF Life annuity plans. Mm.
Right. So just to answer the question on which one pays the highest, it would be the standard plan. Mm. Yeah, the standard plan pays the most when you are alive. But of course, there is a cost to this. The cost to this is that upon demise, in terms of the bequest, the standard plan is the lowest. Mm. So you take more in your lifetime, but upon your demise, you leave lesser. Mm. The basic plan pays lesser than the standard plan in your lifetime. But upon demise, you leave a larger bequest. Mm. The escalating payout plan is like an in-between. The escalating payout plan is for people whom they want their payout to hedge against inflation. Mm. Yeah. But however, if you want to choose the escalating payout plan, you got to accept that the first payout of your escalating payout plan is 20% lower than your standard plan. Mm. So I'll say that again. If you choose the escalating payout plan, you got to accept that the first payout of your escalating payout plan will be lower than the standard plan by 20%. Okay. Mm. However, the payout will increase by 3% every year. Now, which plan is the best? Most people might say, and I've done a straw poll before, most people might say that I'll take the standard plan. Mm-hmm. Who cares about the bequest? I want to. But as they say, the devil always lies in the details. Mm. So if you go and take a look at the details of the basic plan and the standard plan, let's not talk about the escalating payout plan. If you look at the basic plan, the standard plan, based on a full retirement sum of, say, 176,000, the difference in monthly payout is only about $100 per month. Mm. Yeah. However, the bequest difference can be as much as 100,000. Mm. Yeah. So the question then is, for $100 more payout per month, Is it worth my while to lose 100,000 bequests lesser?
Yeah.
So what is the choice? By the way, the standard plan is the default plan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, meaning to say that if you don't choose at age 65, they automatically pay you, they automatically put you in the standard plan. Yeah. And the reason behind that is because CPF has always been sized for people of the low income group, specifically the second quintile of the population, second lowest, not income, household expenditure of family. Who are they? These are the people that cleans the hawker center table, you know, and they earn like maybe an average of about $750 per month. And they really should choose the standard plan because $100 makes a huge difference for them. But for all of us here, we have a benefit sitting at the back and say, which plan should I choose? Well, my choice, personal choice, I will choose the basic plan because $100 per month difference is not going to make a material difference to my retirement. And the bequest, from a mathematical standpoint, is better.
Right.
It's interesting you noted that point about who it's really targeting. In my mind, I'm thinking because of the extended life expectancy that we have today, I mean, who knows? God, Julie, we're probably working till we're 80. You know, the thing is that with inflation, I mean, and cost of living has increased so much. Beyond living on what you can take out on CPF and bequeathing it to your family members is a whole other ball game. Because, I mean, you know, how much can one really accumulate anyway in your CPF account? So is bequeathing it really such an issue, no matter, you know, what socioeconomic level you're at?
Yeah. You are right. CPF life is really an annuity.
Because you need all that money to live in your retirement when you're not earning any money, right?
So when you choose your annuity, you should really not look at it from a bequest standpoint. You should look at it from an income payout standpoint. It is just that because the difference between the standard and the basic plan is so small that we bother to look at the bequest. Otherwise, we wouldn't. But you made an interesting point. And, well, it may interest you to know that you can actually save up to $1 million in your CPF. If you top it up, transfer from OA to your SA, you can actually, or to be more accurate, you can actually reach $1 million as a couple, not individual, as a couple. And it's not bad, right? I mean, it's low cost. Safe, you know, and you can actually reach that amount.
Wait, so you can transfer the OA to the SA?
Yes, you can. Yes. Subject
to a limit.
To the limit of 176,000 this year. And then if you faithfully contribute and you even do the voluntary contribution scheme, it is actually quite a sizable amount when you retire at 55 or 65. No risk. Low cost. Now, it sounds like a CPF salesman now, the truth is that the CPF should form the foundation, pillar of your overall retirement plan.
Yeah. Chris brought up an excellent point. So CPF is meant to provide that basic retirement sum. I think it gives guidance, it gives some form of comfort to Singaporeans as to how much they can expect on a monthly basis, and they can so-called plan their finances accordingly. Now, as to whether or not these sums, they're sufficient, I think that's a whole different question. I mean, depending on your livelihood or depending on how you live your life, these are questions that each and every person has to answer for himself. But as a foundation, as a basis of where to start, I think CPF is an excellent option, probably the only option. Then that's where looking at other asset classes, other forms of income streams that will be on top of the CPF, that's where additional planning will have to come into play. But at the very least, you have a baseline on where to operate from.
I just like to add, just in case, you know, people start running to top up and then 2 years later, they throw stone at me. The two things that people really need to know before they top up. First is liquidity, right? Yes. Secondly, as much as we have said that the special account is getting 4% guaranteed, MediSave as well, and retirement account as well, this 4% guaranteed is renewed on a yearly basis. Yeah, because since January of 2008, our special MediSave retirement account interest rate has been pegged to the 10-year Singapore government securities plus 1%. Okay, so if your 10-year SGS average yield goes down, you can get less than 4%.
Yep.
However, since January of 2008, the government has been guaranteeing it on a year-to-year basis. Yeah, so we always have to be prepared that, yes, it's very good. I like the 4, I like the 5. And even for RA, you can get as much as 6% for the first 30,000. All sound very good, low cost and all that. We just have to be prepared that one day, this guarantee might be removed and we go back, we revert to that 10-year SGS plus 1%, you might get an average of, say, about 3.5 instead of the 4%. As long as we are okay, go ahead and top up. I just don't want people to run away, top up, and then when the government revert back to that rule, and I get killed, flag. My car gets scratched.
Red flag, you know, the policy could change at any time.
At any time.
True, because,
that's the risk.
You know, it's a government institution, right, that's running CPF. But even if that was to happen, and here's how I'm thinking, you know, we are coming out of a period of a decade of rock bottom interest rates. So 10-year government securities, in the long term, if interest rates are going up and up and up across the globe, can the yield really drop on those securities? Is that possible?
Well, it's always possible. You're absolutely right. Last 10 years, absolute low. There has been some movements on the US side in terms of interest rates over the past year. This year, it's a bit of a question mark. What with Trump, the global economy slowing down. So the outlook for interest rates may not be as aggressive, at least when I compare it to last year. So I think the point that Chris is trying to prove is that, yes, well, on the outlook over the next 1 year, 2 years, we may have some insights as to where interest rates might be. But again, the whole idea behind CPF is you're literally looking at a 20, 30-year window. There will be moves in the interim and no one can actually guarantee that this rate will actually stay there.
It's all fluid.
It's all fluid. Yep.
Well, Kelvin, I got one question because you're head of investments and wealth advisor at OCBC Bank. And I mean, I put my old hat on because I was a stockbroker many decades ago. And so I have an attraction for higher risk investments. You know, I mean, and I was an equity broker. I like the fact that equities over a longer term, and it's proven time and time again, are the best asset class in the world next to, I think, London property. I saw an Economist once that beat bonds and equities over a 15-year time frame. So with what's happened to the stock market recently, I mean, we had the rug pulled out from under us in the fourth quarter of 2018. And equities have become a whole lot cheaper. For those who have a sufficient amount, who are risk averse in the OA, is it a good time to perhaps, you know, supplement or complement the returns they're getting in CPF and say, okay, maybe I should use this and invest in the CPFIS or in some of these mandated funds that they can go into?
Yes, you're right. But of course, a lot of considerations have to come into play. I think the point which I brought up previously was that now CPF gives you this baseline risk-free of 2.5% at the very least. So in this case, let's say equities, at the very least, I must be somewhat assured that in terms of the longer term returns, it should be matching that at the very least, or it has to be higher for it to make sense. So cash would still be the preferred option, given that cash generally, at least of now, while the interest rates have been moving up, it's still lower vis-a-vis a CPF. So yes, we do advise our clients and our investors to start looking at certain sectors, certain regions, because over the last quarter, in fact, a lot of these counters have actually dropped to very attractive levels. The main thing that we're looking out for this year from a bank's point of view is that the outlook for this year is uncertain. Every other day, there are new developments. Trump is putting up a new tweet. The U.S. trade...
Oh, don't we know it. Cover it every day. Asia Business First.
Correct. And I think the key focus, at least for the first quarter this year, would be the U.S. and China trade war. We are not too sure how exactly that would resolve. Having said that, if there are certain sectors that are starting to look attractive, now is probably the best time to start dipping your toes into it. Let's say you have a certain sum of money, you might not need to place the whole amount in. You can actually start to regulate your investments in such a way that you can start going into the market accordingly.
You know, before we decide to go into any investments or buy any products, we must begin with an end in mind. It's like before we buy an ingredient to cook something, we first must decide what we want to eat and have the recipe. So CPF is actually meant for retirement. And so when we are investing the monies in CPF, we must know that actually it's meant for my retirement. And when a person is in retirement, what they are really looking for is not return on investments. In retirement, they are not looking for return on investments, ROI. They are really looking for ROI, reliability of income. Safe retirement income stream is very important for a person in retirement. One of the best instruments to give you a very reliable income stream that hedges against longevity risk is actually an annuity. CPF Life is the cheapest and the best return annuity. So before we decide to take our CPF money and go and invest it elsewhere, if we can, we ask ourselves, when I retire, what is the amount of money, like what we Singaporeans say, we die must have, right? So if I retire and I would like to have $10,000, by all this $10,000, $4,000, I die must have. Mm-hmm. It can be solved by using your CPF life. And therefore, then you try and not use your CPF to invest it out. Yep. Keep it there so that it saves towards an amount that gives you that reliable income stream. Mm. Use your cash and then go and invest it for the rest. So that's another way of looking at it.
Right, okay.
Sounds like sound advice, gentlemen. We've got to leave it there today. Certainly given us, I'm sure all the listeners out there, a lot to think about. Mm. So I really do appreciate that. Christopher, thank you very much. And also Calvin, Christopher Tan, Executive Director of Money Owl and CEO of Provident, and Calvin Goh, who is the Head of Investments and Wealth Advisory at OCBC Bank. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
So, and for a comprehensive coverage of business news every day, you can also catch Adam and myself on our TV show, Asia Business First. It airs Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. Singapore Hong Kong time on Channel News Asia, or you can watch it on channelnewsasia.com under the video on demand section. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.